Hello, everyone. This is Dave Goulas, president of EasyDC 3PL, and thank you for tuning in to the Beyond Fulfillment podcast, where we spotlight small business owners, entrepreneurs, startup founders, and we have real conversations about their journey, what it's really like, and what they've learned along the way. Thank you and enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. I'm your host, Dave Goulas of EasyDC 3PL. And today, my guest is the CEO and founder of Fulfill.com, Joe Spisak. Welcome, Joe.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me, Dave.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here. If you would, for those that might not be aware, can you talk about what Fulfill.com is and how it came to be?
Yeah, sure thing. So Fulfill.com is a matchmaking service that helps e-commerce brands and really just companies in general find the right warehousing and fulfillment partners. So we have a little bit over 500 3PLs on our network spreading across 2,500 plus locations. And we have a little bit over 300 brands per month right now that come to us to use our fulfillment finder service. And essentially what we do is our matchmaking team will talk to these brands and work with them to gather up their individual scope of work. And then using our backend software system that we've built, we will, look at holistically at our, network of 500 plus 3PLs and narrow that down to the best 1 to 5 options for that particular brand. We introduce the brand over to those, top picks on our network and then let the 3PLs kind of duke it out to see who can get them under contract and bring that brand to the finish line. And that's basically how our process works. And then how we got here is an interesting story as well. So I have owned a couple different e-commerce brand companies that I've since sold. I actually have a couple of them here. My wife and I started a couple different companies in the tabletop board game space. And we ended up doing pretty well with those companies, starting to ship, several thousand orders per month. And we get to what I call this graduation period, where, you're starting to do a certain order volume per month and you look to outsource your shipping to a third-party logistics company. So we did that and we went through 3 different 3PLs over the course of a year and a half, just had a really unpleasant experience. So really by necessity to keep growing our game companies, we ended up bringing that in-house and started our own e-commerce fulfillment company as well. Ended up bootstrapping that and scaling it to purchasing 140,000 square foot building over the course of probably 2.5-3 years. And then sold that to start Fulfill. So you can kind of see how we took the e-commerce experience, the warehousing and logistics experience. And now we sit in the middle and play matchmaker.
Wow. Yeah. And we see so many companies like that where they were born out of like a problem that the founder had and just decided to solve themselves. So you have the board game and you're having trouble finding the right fulfillment partner. And that's something too, that, I see is just, I'm relatively new in the fulfillment industry, about a year or so in, and, it's not so easy to kind of, you'll find out who a 3PL is and see what they do, or, the brand will see that, but to really get acquainted and understand the workings of the business, it's not so simple, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really difficult to, if you're a brand, to try and find the right 3PL. Just you take kind of the typical path of how a brand goes to look for a 3PL. And most of the time it's going to Google and searching, best apparel fulfillment center near me or whatever, insert your vertical is in e-commerce. And you're getting hit with ads from what seems to be the same 25 big name 3PLs that have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of ad spend per month, when in reality, there's 15,000 plus e-commerce fulfillment centers in the United States alone, where these boutique level 3PLs seem to be able to offer better pricing, better shipping SLAs, better communication than some of these bigger guys. So it always kind of confused me why it seemed like there's only 25 to 50 options, when in reality, there's so many great people that can take care of your brand and do a much better job than some of the bigger guys out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we're full disclosure here, we're a customer of yours at EasyDC. And we've been incredibly happy too, just because when you bring us a lead, because I'm with other lead services too, and we'll just get a name, some generic detail, and someone may not even want to get on the phone, where yours is fully vetted. a lot more intricate detail. You specifically brought them to us because you know us, and there's a synergy there. So it's just such a better experience to start a conversation than the typical path.
Yeah, and we appreciate you saying that. That's something we really pride ourselves in, is we're not, you know, having a brand form submit on our website and blasting that out to all the 3PLs on our network. Like, we really do a white glove matchmaking process with these brands to narrow it down and find them a couple of the top picks. Not only is this great for the brands and on their side of the house, it's great for our 3PLs too, because you know how long the sales cycles can be on some of these opportunities. And, you know, the typical way that, at least how we ran and filled our warehouse at Chip Daddy, which was the 3PL that I own, I ran tons and tons of Google ads, and the sales cycle was just so long because we had to go through this qualifying process with every one of these brands. It felt like they were talking to, you know, 100 other 3PLs out there, instead of kind of going through this white glove matchmaking process. So yeah, that's something we really pride ourselves in, is kind of doing right by the brands and the 3PLs on our network, and making sure that everybody's happy in this equation.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned the board games that you started. What led you to get into that?
Yeah, so good question. And I started this, you know, in 2015 time period, right? Whenever I was graduating college from the University of Virginia. And, you know, I wrestled in college and I was really focused on that. And obviously I got my degree, but I kind of thought, you know, I always wanted to go and be an entrepreneur. I had my network engineering job that I was working right out of college, but I was still, you know, I come from a big board gaming family and we like to have fun. And I was also still partying pretty hard at the time. So the first game that we started was called Dicey. And it's basically what we call like the Mario Party of drinking games. And it was just like a fun party game that, you know, we developed over the course of a couple years, and I would bring it to parties. And, you know, it got to the point where we would be out at the bars with a couple of our friends and they'd be like, "Hey, let's go home back to your place and play Dicey." And so whenever I had people doing that, I was like, man, maybe I actually have something here. And my older sister is a very accomplished UX designer. So I, you know, went and begged my older sister if she could do some free work for me and kind of help bring this crazy drinking game that I have to life. And that's what we ended up doing. And, you know, this took, like, again, years and years, and the product was ended up coming out and being okay, but really nothing to write home about. But the good thing was that this was really what kind of got my feet wet in the e-commerce industry. Like, it taught me how to fully develop a product and bring something to life from, you know, literally just an idea I had in my head, and ended up getting that out there and, you know, selling tens of thousands of units with it, and ended up kind of getting away from that just because I, you know, was starting to push into other things, and I was kind of moving on from those college glory party days. And, you know, a couple Christmases after I started Dicey, I was playing Trivial Pursuit with my grandparents and my parents. And I was saying to them, man, this just seems so unfair that, you know, we're getting all these questions from your guys' generations, but nothing from Gen Z, Millennial, Gen X. I feel like this would be a much better game if we had even trivia. So, you know, I went to Amazon and looked for a more generational based trivia game. Couldn't find anything. And that's when the idea came to start OK Boomer, which is just that. It's a generational based trivia game. And that's when we really started to, you know, make it big. So, you know, it probably took me 25% of the time to develop this game than it did Dicey. Like, from idea to actually having product in hand probably took me about 6 months. And then over the course of probably 3 or 4 years, we did $6 or $7 million in sales. And that's what led me down the road just to start my own fulfillment company.
Wow. So you had an idea with the first one, Dicey, went with it. And granted, it was about the college experience and the drinking and all that type of stuff. And so that almost kind of got your feet wet and taught you a lot of the starter mistakes. And so when you had the OK Boomer idea, it seemed like you had a lot more experience and it was a lot easier path to bring it to market.
Yeah, 100%. Like, and there's just so many different examples of kind of that failure and learning from it with Dicey that we took and just did it so much better with OK Boomer, just from the product design to the marketing strategy to who we were actually marketing to. Like, obviously, you know, this is 20 some year old college kids to maybe 30 year olds to, this is a true, you know, generational based trivia game where the whole family can play this. So it's a much broader audience and has much broader appeal, which led to much, you know, higher sales just because, you know, our target demographic, we sold to a lot of, you know, moms buying this for their families for Thanksgiving or Christmas, and people that actually have some more purchasing power, let alone, you know, as opposed to broke college kids who see this and impulse buy it and maybe play it once or twice, et cetera, et cetera. So just a lot of learning lessons along the way. And that led us to the biggest learning lesson of, wow, it seems like we could have a much better shipping experience out here if we did this ourselves. Let's see if we can start our own fulfillment center and do right by other brands like we wish we're done right by us.
Yeah. And that's a whole other animal, right? Because it's one thing to come up with the product and, you know, the design and all that and get production and start selling it. But to actually go out and start your own fulfillment center, what was that experience like?
Yeah, I mean, it was extremely difficult, but it helped because we really understood the e-commerce side of the house, right? Like, we still had skin in the game. We were obviously shipping for our own board game companies at the time, and that told a really great story. And, you know, so we literally started off in my mom's garage, then moved into a 1,000-square-foot building, 6,000-square-foot building. We packed that 6,000-square-foot building to the brim and use that money to purchase 140,000 square foot building that we got a really good deal on. And, you know, after that, you know, we just started to hit that hockey stick growth curve trajectory, but tons of learning lessons along the way. But the good thing was we, you know, kind of planted our flag and had these good case studies in the board gaming vertical. So the first 7 out of 10 of our customers were board gaming companies that needed help. And then we started to bring on other customers that we met kind of through our travels of doing, of building the board game companies over the course of the last couple of years, and just started to kind of steady stack customers from there, started to run ads, started to, you know, do some other interesting marketing through content creation, and just learned along the way. And, you know, we were one of Ship Heroes, like very first customers at the time, the warehouse management system company. We partnered with them very heavily and got a few customers from them too. And yeah, the rest is history.
Wow. Okay. And you also mentioned the college, University of Virginia. So you were a D1 wrestler. So that's, I mean, that's no small accomplishment. I mean, that's big time athletics. So, and I saw you did a post recently too, where you talked about you'd wrestled since you were 4 years old and your dad was a wrestler, your grandpa as well. Like, how do you think what it takes to compete at that level of athletics is transferred, or translated to success in your entrepreneurial career?
Yeah, so great question. And I think there's a direct correlation between wrestling and the success that I've had as an entrepreneur. And so, like you said, my dad was a D1 wrestler. My grandpa was a D1 wrestler. You know, we literally had a wrestling room at our house growing up. We had a couple mats that we threw in the garage. And probably from 6th or 7th grade on, you know, my dad and I were wrestling every single day before school and then every single day after school, all the way through my senior year of high school. And even whenever I'd come back from college break, my dad would be, you know, kind of training all winter to wrestle and practice with me during college. So whenever he sent me back to school, I'd be ready to scrap over Christmas break. So, you know, that was just such a blessing. And one of the reasons me and my dad are best friends, because we got to share that journey together. And it was just such a special journey and special time that we got to spend together growing up. And one of my things my dad would really preach is this focus, discipline, consistency. And, you know, those are kind of the three pillars of what we thought it would take to be successful and be a champion in the wrestling world. And you take those three exact pillars of focus, discipline, consistency, and you put that under a different lens of the entrepreneurial journey. And to me, it takes pretty much the exact same three pillars to be successful. So I think there's a direct correlation. I think if you can bring that good attitude and just be willing to fail and kind of operate under those three pillars, then you can find a way to be successful as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like you talked about the failing. I mean, that's kind of maybe one misconception out there is, You know, you see someone with a successful business, and even someone like yourself, you've had two exits very early in your entrepreneurial career. And I'm sure people don't necessarily see or even realize all the failure, all the mistakes, all the, you know, times you get knocked down. I mean, how do you have a strategy for dealing with that when you think something's going to work and you just like fall on your face?
Yeah, it's crazy. So one of my best friends and college teammates, he has worked at Nike since graduation. And one of the big, I guess, mantras that they've kind of beaten into all the Nike employees is fail faster. And I just thought that was so interesting because you don't hear that coming from too many corporate companies, right? It's typically a much different mantra than fail faster. And that is something that I really kind of, whenever I heard that, I really championed that and embodied that from the start of my entrepreneurial journey. Knew I was going to fall on my face. I knew I was going to take some L's, but it's all about how many L's you can take and keep getting back up and making them as fast as you can. And then promising yourself, you're not going to make those same mistakes again. And if you can do that and pack a lot of failure into months, years, et cetera, you kind of blink. And then after a pretty short period of time, you're just making these gigantic gains over and over and over again. And that's one of the things I really prided myself early on in my entrepreneurial career is making a lot of mistakes, but doing them really fast, getting them over with, and then growing, you know, very fast in my career. Like much to my wife's dismay, like whenever we were running the 3PL, like we took some pretty big risks, like going from a 6,000 square foot warehouse to 140,000 square foot warehouse. Like you're on the clock. You need to fill that warehouse like relatively fast, or the money you're paying for the leasing and the extra employees that you need to run something that's much bigger, it's going to catch up to you and you're not going to be in a good place. So we were really on the clock to make some moves happen and get some new folks in, or otherwise we were going to be in a bad spot as the business. And I was sleeping at the warehouse some nights. I literally was working 80-hour weeks for pretty much two straight years. And it, you know, it was tough. It was a super, super grind. But we ended up making it through and we packed a lot of failure into a very short amount of time. And we came out on the other side of COVID completely different entrepreneurs than what we went in as.
Wow. Yeah. And that's something you don't always, you know, that doesn't always get the shine on social media either. So you talk about sleeping at the warehouse or those 80 hour weeks. You know, that's true dedication. And yeah, paid off for sure. And we mentioned earlier about the exits. Is that something that you had planned to do going in, that you were going to scale a business to a certain point and then look to sell?
Yeah, so good question. And that's something that I wasn't really sure about going in. You know, I think I thought with all of my companies, like, I'm going to take this thing to the moon. These are, you know, everything's going to be a $100 million company. We're going to sell it, be rich, and live a fairy tale kind of ending. But you just start to learn so much as you're going through this. Like, same thing with raising money. Like, that's something I never thought I would do. I'd bootstrap all of my companies. But then a strategic investor comes along that, you know, it makes a lot of sense to do that. And you can mitigate your risk and not have to play with all of your own money, which, you know, we've taken on smaller investments with Fulfill. But I to answer your question, I didn't necessarily know if I was going to sell my companies or not, or what the final exit strategy was going to be, which I don't necessarily recommend to entrepreneurs. Like, that's something you should probably have figured out on what is your end game and what is your exit strategy whenever you're building a new business and going into it. But with Ship Daddy, you know, once we got to the point where we were very close to filling that warehouse, I was kind of thinking, you know, what's next for me? Like, am I going to continue to double down on this and open up another West Coast location and continue to kind of stack on locations and rinse and repeat this process? Or could I go potentially a different direction and maybe do something very similar to what I'm doing, but kind of combine my e-commerce experience as well and not necessarily be confined by a geographic location? And that's when, you know, the light bulb went off for Fulfill.com. And I kind of started to build my business thesis on this matchmaking, this brokering between the brands and the 3PLs, since I was in a pretty rare spot that, you know, I had experience on both sides of the house. And then I probably worked on, you know, that thesis for 6 months to a year and talked to the rest of the guys on my team and got them to a point where they felt comfortable running ship daddy themselves and went a more unconventional exit strategy instead of, you know, selling this to a VC firm or getting rolled up into another 3PL in the industry, selling this back to my business partners who were two of my best friends since sixth grade. And, you know, they're still running ship daddy to this day. The warehouse has been full. They're starting families now and doing really well and just kind of cashing checks. And I kind of pushed into a different sector and took my knowledge and started Fulfill.com.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. And like you said, you don't hear about that every day, but I mean, that's just a testament to like all the different things you've learned along the way, where one, you could sell to another acquirer, one back to your partners. And then now you have a whole other business that you put that money into that's thriving as well. And another thing too, I've seen on your LinkedIn. So you are an active combat sports athlete as well. So with the jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, that's correct. So I've been living, ever since I sold Ship Daddy, I've been living down here in Austin, Texas with my wife for the last couple of years. And, you know, I told you I've been wrestling since I've been 4 years old. And it's been such a big part of my life. And it's one of the things that I really was missing in Texas. Like I miss those locker room antics and being able to have that tight community of people and just being able to work out and kind of scrap before work every day. And although there's not a big wrestling population in Texas, it's the number one spot in the world to train now for Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And there's a lot of good overlap with jiu-jitsu and wrestling. And once I realized that there's just top level training everywhere down here for jiu-jitsu, I've been pretty deep into the scene for probably the last year and a half, and I've been competing in jiu-jitsu and I've been getting more and more serious in that side of the sport. So I'll take on a match like every couple months, and I just had one a couple weeks ago. But yeah, I'm trying to train for the world qualifying tournament next year. It's called ADCCs, where I'm looking to go 145 pounds. And so, yeah, that's kind of what I'm ultimately training for, and, we'll see how it goes.
Wow. Okay. And how much do you think that helps you too? Because it's a break from the typical business grind, getting physical activity and the endorphin release and all the camaraderie of the team. I mean, how much do you think that helps you as far as like a different, like just kind of switching over to something different than just working all the time?
Yeah, for me, I need an outlet like that. And, you know, I love working out, but, you know, it's tough for me to be consistent whenever I'm just going on runs or I'm lifting or I'm kind of just going through the motion. So it feels much better whenever I have something on the calendar. I'm like, all right, I've got a match in 3 weeks. I need to have my diet airtight. I need to be sleeping correctly. I need to be training consistently. And, you know, that just reduces so much temptation, like to be going out and to stop drinking or doing whatever else. It just kind of forces you to live your life in the right way whenever you like to compete like I do and you like to win like I do. So I think that's one of the big benefits of it for me. And it's so easy to get, you know, whenever you want to win so badly and you're so focused on certain things, like to get wrapped up in something like work and thinking and getting so much of your identity involved in being an entrepreneur that it can actually get to the point where, you know, it gets unhealthy. Like I told you about me sleeping in the warehouse for months at a time. And it got to the point where it was just really, you know, I was making giant leaps in my entrepreneurial and business growth, but it wasn't sustainable. It was turning out to be really unhealthy. And for me, the other side to kind of balance my entrepreneurial grind is competing at a really high level in jiu-jitsu or in wrestling still, because it forces me to be focused and doing something else and putting time and energy into something on the other side of the house. So to me, it's been incredibly beneficial for the longevity of my entrepreneurial journey, just because it's keeping me young, it's keeping me active, and it's keeping me mentally in the game where it needs to be.
Yeah, for sure. And it's great too, you have that type of self-awareness, right? Where you know what makes you tick. And if it's a match on the calendar that's really going to get you to get all your other aspects in tight, then that's what you do. So that's cool to see for sure. What do you, so obviously you were in a engineering job and you had a degree and you had this itch to start your own business and you just went for it. And I'm sure there's a lot of people watching and so many people out there that they're in maybe a corporate job. They're not happy. They have an idea and they want to do something, but either maybe they have that fear or they don't know where to start. Like what would your advice be for someone that's really wants to start a business, but they just don't know what that first step is?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so I think one of the things I could say to that is we are no longer living in the age where you need to quit your full-time job and, you know, risk it all and take out some big loan to start your own company and do that full-time. Like, you know, for like we're living in the time of this work from home environment. So if you can even just find a job that gets you paid well and gives you a high degree of flexibility, as long as you're, you know, producing the results you need to be producing, then that's like best case scenario, right? Like with my job out of college, like as long as I was, you know, crushing my quota and hitting the numbers I needed to be hitting, they didn't care what I was doing on the side or any extra work that I was getting done. So it's the perfect opportunity for me to come back to that kind of fail faster approach of, you know, create this e-commerce brand and experiment and take this money that I was making and push it into this other kind of side hustle venture that I was starting without having to completely quit my job and take out a loan and try and figure this out on, you know, someone else's dime. So I think that would be the advice that I would give, like, try and find a job where you can make six figures, work from home, and has a high degree of flexibility, and then take that extra money and start experimenting in an area that is of interest to you, that you think, you know, you could start a company in. And then the last thing that I'll say, and something that I wish I would have done much earlier on in my business journey, is find a great mentor. Find someone in the space that has that you're looking to compete in, looking to build a company in, and that has actually done this before, right? Don't be taking advice from people that are in, you know, other vastly different industries, or just, you know, people that haven't done what you're trying to do before. If you can find a great mentor, you're going to save yourself so much money and so many headaches along the way. And after I found a couple good mentors in my space, it was just so eye-opening. And I was like, man, why didn't I do this a couple years sooner?
Wow. Yeah, it's so true. And one thing too, I've noticed about you, even since we've got to know each other, is you're always having fun. You're always full of like positive vibes. And even when I had reached out to you about being on the show, you were like, oh man, I got bunch of other founders you need to meet. They, you know, and you just instantly did some new connections and people that I was able to meet that I didn't even know about. Like, where's that? You always just seem to be so like wanting to help others. Like, where do you think that comes from?
Yeah, well, thank you for saying that, man. I really appreciate it. And really, it's funny because our whole team's like that at Fulfill, which is very intentional. Like, we want to hire people with that positivity and kind of that giving attitude. And I think it's a couple different things, but you know, one, it's, I've had so many people that have helped me along the way that I feel this constant pressure and need to help other people in return as just kind of a grand gesture. Thank you to everybody that's helped me along the way. It seems like it's kind of this rite of passage of being an entrepreneur, that it's the right thing to do, that you didn't get wherever you were getting because of just yourself. You had a lot of people that took chances on you along the way. And if you can return that favor and help other people without any expectation of something in return, it's just the right thing to do. And it feels good. And it always comes back around to help you out too. So that's just been, I think, one of our core philosophies since we've been doing this. And it just makes me happy, right? It's just doing the right thing. And it's fun kind of taking chances and working with others and helping them out. And it all comes back to help you anyway. So yeah, I think that's kind of my answer to that.
Okay, cool. Another neat thing too that happened, this is a few months ago, but you were named Shopify top 15 e-commerce influencers and a must follow. So yeah. What's that like? Because I mean Shopify is as big as it gets as far as e-commerce. What's it like to be in that type of company?
Yeah, it was a super honor because I was I mean Shopify, right? Like it's just amazing to be recognized by a company like of that stature, and that was definitely a first for me. And how I discovered it was pretty crazy as well. So I was literally on SEMrush pretty late at night checking our backlinks, and I saw that we had this, really high level backlink coming from this new company. And so I was checked through and I was like, wow, like when did we get this? This is a really high authority score for this backlink. And then I look and I stumble upon this Shopify article that just came out that we got listed in. And I was reading through it and I was just like, man, it's crazy to think how far we've come in the course of a couple of years to now being recognized as, one of the top voices in logistics by one of the top e-commerce sales channels in the entire world. So that was a very surreal moment for me, but something that I'm, very proud of and was excited to be included with earlier this year. And yeah, I hope to keep living up to that. And it's been really fun these last couple of years sharing my logistics experience and journey and failures. And I think just being an open book and being willing to share some of those failures is one of the reasons that people have tuned in to listen, because we're not just kind of sugarcoating it and showing all the wins and the money that's being made. It's we're showing the long nights in the warehouse and everything that you had to do to be successful in the logistics world, which is a very tough, ever-changing, ever-evolving world for sure.
Yeah, and another really cool thing that you do is you have the community. So you have your warehousing fulfillment network. You have like a community of members where people can basically talk shop and ask questions. And you have courses on there as well. Like how'd that idea come about?
It came about from how a lot of the companies and ideas we've created in the past have come about is really looking around for something that we thought would be useful in the space that was underserved or just completely non-existent. And, it comes back to us starting our own 3PL and looking for mentors and looking for resources out there and just nothing really being available. Like we had to, do all of our own thought theories on how we should market for our 3PL, on how we should create contracting resources for our 3PL, price quote templates, carrier rate quote templates, a CRM to manage all of our leads. Like nobody else was sharing resources or building a community specifically for the logistics space. So we started doing that probably about 2 years ago, like whenever we started, pretty close to the time when we started Fulfill. And it just turned into something that people really love coming to and using because there's really nothing like that out there right now in the logistics space, is a community where everybody can come together, talk shop, share resources, ask questions without being embarrassed that, it's a dumb question. And yeah, I think it's been a real blessing and a lot of fun growing that community group. And it's been really exciting to see people coming in and answering questions and contributing to that group as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the people I've interacted with as well, because we're relatively new in the fulfillment space, and it's nice to see other people that are doing exactly what you do that are having the exact same challenges, and to be able to talk about, well, this is what I'm doing that's worked, this is what hasn't worked, and vice versa. It just helps so much on all ends where people can have that camaraderie and help each other learn.
For sure.
Okay, so we're nearing the end of 2023 and heading into 2024. What's next for you and Fulfill.com?
Yeah, so we are closing a raise right now for Fulfill. And next year, we are looking to continue our growth and expansion. And really, the majority of the money that we will be raising will go into hiring more folks for our engineering team to continue to build out this matchmaking marketplace. And really, next steps, we're beta testing our software right now, which is basically a 3PL login where they can come and log in directly on our platform, manage the leads that we're sending to them, recycle leads back to us that they don't want, that they're generating and they don't want or can't use. self-service their directory listing. So, you know, if you add in an additional warehouse site or want to add in pictures or videos or update, you know, your guys' profile on our site, you can do that directly from there. And then same thing, we'll do a brand side of the portal as well, where they'll be able to directly compare the 3PLs that we're matching them with. They can accept or deny any 3PLs that we're matching them with. And then we can give them other kind of resources and tools as well as they continue to grow their e-commerce brand. So that's where we're pushing next. We're really excited about next year because we're continuing to push into this software as a service model side of our business and just continue to offer a better and better matchmaking solution for brands to find the right warehousing and fulfillment partners.
Wow. Outstanding. Okay. And if people want to get in touch with you or follow you or learn more about what you're doing, what's the best way for people to reach out to you?
Yeah, so a couple places. I'm pretty active on Twitter. So my Twitter handle is at Joe Spezy. LinkedIn, feel free to add me at Joe Spezak. I'm also very active on that platform. And then lastly, like I'm always accessible by email at joe@fulfill.com. So yeah, if anybody listening to this needs help or wants to talk shop, I love doing that and would love to catch up. So feel free to reach out at whatever works best for you guys.
All right. Well, thank you much for that. Again, Joe Spezak, CEO and founder of Fulfill.com. And that's all the time we have this week. And we will see you next time. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave. Yeah.
Hello again. Dave Goulas here. Thank you for tuning in to the Beyond Fulfillment podcast. If you like what you heard on today's episode and you got value from it, please click the link below to subscribe so you'll be notified of future episodes when they drop. If you would like to be a guest on a future show, you can also click the link below or you can email us at info@beyondfulfillmentpodcast.com. That's info@beyondfulfillmentpodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in and we'll see